I don't want to make this a big drama like KD.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 100% deposit match bonus. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. You can also find my work, of course, over on basketballmonster.com, where we're doing all our seasonal projections for fantasy basketball and, of course, daily projections for DFS as well. People always ask the question of me, how often are the projections updated on Basketball Monster? I literally do it every single day. We do an automated process every day, then there's a manual process every day, and there's an in-depth manual process for each team twice, probably three times a week as well. So they are updated every single day for those season-long projections and the daily projections as well over on Basketball Monster. Today's show is going to be a little bit different just because of the way that the schedule breaks down this week. We had 11 games on Monday, so of course, I'm going to go through all of those games, talk about all the action there, give out the nightly awards, all that stuff. But then tomorrow, Tuesday, there's one game. So we're not going to do a big DFS section on that. There's no point. There's one game. I know some of the Aussie sites are doing one game contests. I know you're not allowed to do those in the US. And I know that some of the sites in the US, DraftKings is doing like a combined one game from Tuesday and then the first two games from Wednesday. But if we're talking about doing something 2 days in advance, and me giving advice on, especially when there's all these injuries that we're not 100% sure of, doing this 36 hours before those games start, it's not the best use of my time and of doing this podcast. So we're not going to have a DFS preview section on today's show. And then tomorrow's show, we'll do it a little bit different. We will have it'll just be all DFS basically. So I'm not going to worry about doing monstrous line of the night for the one game Bulls Lakers breakdown or anything along those lines. We're just going to be doing the preview of Wednesday's 14 games. I might as well tell you what we're doing for the rest of the week after that. So then after that, on Wednesday, after those 14 games, we'll do the full seasonal breakdown of all 14 games. And then the next day, it's Thanksgiving, but there will still be a podcast coming out because we're not celebrating Thanksgiving over here, of course. And then what I'll do for Thursday's show, it'll be a preview of all 10 of Friday's games. So that's how the week is going to break down. Enough rabbiting on for me.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. That's a really, really good idea, Mr. Bolton. Let's start off by talking about the monstrous line of the night for Monday. And of course, it goes to Kyrie Irving of the Boston Celtics. 47 points for Kyrie on a ridiculous 16 of 22 shooting, 5 triples, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, and a steal. And he went to the line 11 times, making 10 of them. Now, I thought Kyrie this season would be in for a pretty big year. It turns out he's almost bang on where we projected him at the start of the year. He's 13th currently. He's 4th over the last week. I thought his biggest improvement was going to come from the free throw line. It hasn't been the case yet. He's not in his percentage because I knew he was going to shoot around 90%. He's at 89.5%. But it was more in attempts. He's only at 4.4 attempts this season. He was at 4.6 last year. But over his last four games, he's gotten to the line 32 times. Even if you take out today's 11, that's 21 over three games. So that's 7 attempts per game, which is a much better number. And if he's going to start getting to the line 7 attempts per game, then he's really going to be able to push into that top 12, top 11, maybe top 10 discussion, especially considering he is averaging 22.5 points, 3 boards, 5.5 assists, and a really big number is his steal rate, 1.6. Now that has dropped a little bit lately, but hopefully he can maintain those numbers. Awesome efficiency, which was another concern this season, especially when Gordon Hayward went down. Would he be able to maintain that high field goal percentage? He was at 47 last year. He's at 47 this year. You're one of the best tough shot makers in the NBA. Kyrie, if you took him at that start of the second round, I think you'd be pretty happy with what you've gotten so far. I think you'd be very bloody happy with what you've gotten so far. As long as that pick doesn't completely go in the toilet, if it just returns a similar value, I think you're looking pretty good, and you get some of those other high rises later on, and Kyrie is providing that value as your monstrous line of the night and as one of those players who's been very, very impressive so far this season. All right, now it is time for me to tell you about a new sponsor of the podcast, and it's great to have these guys on board. It is MyBookie. Ever since I've started this podcast, which has been, this is the fifth season of doing this podcast now, I will get people asking me for advice clearly on fantasy basketball, but also people ask me, you know, well, what do you like in terms of betting? Which, is there any totals you like, any spreads that you like? And is there any game that really stands out? Have you got, you know, tomorrow, have you got the Bulls or the Lakers?
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
And I can give my thoughts on all those things, on, you know, if I like certain spreads or which teams are going to win. But where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why I'm telling people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years and their reputation is rock solid. I've heard nothing but good things about MyBookie, and I've been on the site myself and used it. And it's very, very easy to use. 100% cash bonuses as well. So when you sign up, 100% bonus deposit match. It's fantastic. The amount that you put in, they give you the same amount back. So off the bat, you're just making money for doing nothing. They have the fastest payouts. It's just 2 business days to get your cash when you win big. So if you know who's going to win, if you got an idea of what you want to do in terms of betting, using your NBA knowledge to make some money, you can lay down your cash on mybookie.ag and win big today. That's the site that you need to go check. But what you can do is, if you use our promo code, which is really important, that is LockedOnNBA, that will activate your offer of getting a 100% bonus on your initial deposit. MyBookie.ag will match your initial deposit 100%. So go over to MyBookie.ag and use the promo code LockedOnNBA. You play, you win, and you get paid. All right, that will take us now on to the waiver wire line of the night. Didn't really ever expect to be talking about Kostas Koufos in one of the awards of the night, but here we are. Koufos, in large part thanks to Dave Yeager's, whatever the bullshit is that he's running over there, 16 points for Koufos, 4 rebounds, a steal and 3 blocks, and 7 of 9 from the field and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. This is nothing against one of the stars of Season 2 of The Wire, Kostas Koufos. Because whenever he plays, whenever he had to replace Boog Cousins in his time in Sacramento, whenever he gets on the court, the dude produces. He's very much like a Mediterranean-based Aaron Baines, in that when they play, the numbers will come. We know that. But the problem is, he's just getting a reliable role out of him enough for fantasy to make a difference. It's just not happening. But weirdly, over the last week, the 105th-ranked player in the NBA in fantasy is Kostas Koufos, averaging 9.5 and 5.5 with 1.3 steals and a block. It's really helped by the fact that he's shooting 81% from the field, and that's probably not going to stick. But he is a 59% shooter for the season, and he does, in those deeper leagues, have some value at 20-minute a night role. Now, we know that Zach Randolph's there, Scalabissier, Will Cauley-Stein, and working out who's going to get the minutes, not who should get the minutes, because we're well aware it should be Cauley-Stein and Labissiere, but who is going to get the minutes is a tough one to try and get a handle on. But since they moved Cauley-Stein to the bench, the Cauley-Stein-Koufos combination, which is as weird a combination as you could probably imagine, has been getting more minutes than the Randolph-Labissiere pairing, which is opening up the games. And that's getting both Koufos and Cauley-Stein more playing time, enabling these bigger lines from Koufos. So while he is the 105th ranked player over the last week, I wouldn't be going crazy in trying to add him. But these last 3 games, 10-7-4 with 3 steals, 4-7-2, 16-4 with a steal and 3 blocks, all very serviceable. So if the Kings are on a low volume night and you've got some room and you need some big man stats, you know, Koufos in a 14-team league is worth a look. Maybe in a 12, if there's just nothing else out there, you can add him. At this point, for immediate production, I'd feel better about Koufos than I would with Labissiere, who's starting and playing like 12 minutes a game, which is just another level of bullshit from Yeager. But we can say what we think should happen, we can say what we think needs to happen, but it doesn't matter if the coach doesn't do those things. So we just have to go with what's actually happening. And what's actually happening at the moment is Kostas Koufos, and he's putting up good numbers, but it's not clearly a long-term solution for your fantasy team, for the Kings actual team, or for anybody's real sanity in terms of trying to analyze what these coaches are doing on a daily basis. The young gun of the night is the Baptist, John Collins. 21-9 for Colo, 2 blocks, 10 of 12 from the field, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. But probably the most important stat of this is he played 36 minutes. He started the second half with Lukey Babbitt out with that back issue, but he played alongside the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, in the first quarter even. And this is what needs to happen on an ongoing basis. Now, this is a game where Mike Muscala was out with the ankle issue. Ersan Ilyasova is not in the rotation, and Luke Babbitt was missing with the back problem. So the 36 minutes is on the high side. But again, The promising thing was is that we'd seen Collins play exclusively as a backup five. In fact, the game before this, he played every one of his minutes without Muscala and without Ilyasova. Every one of his minutes came at centre and not alongside Dedmon. In this one, they were sharing the court. He looked fantastic. He's the most exciting player on that team. I think if you're a Hawks fan, you'd probably agree with me. And they need to see what he can get, whether it's at centre or whether it's at power forward. If he gets 30 minutes a night, it's done. He's a top 70 player. There's no doubt about that in my mind. No doubt in my mind at all if he gets 30 a night. The problem is will he get it and when will he get it? If he's on your wire, I'd be all for adding him. He's 44th ranked player over the last week. He's 115th on the season in only 22 minutes a game, averaging 11.5 and 7.5. And I was worried when Ilyasova was going to come back, when Muscala was going to come back, that they were going to limit him and play him like 18 minutes and play Muscala some at center and get Ilyasova in. But Budenholz has gone, fine, Ersan, you're done. I get the feeling that Muscala might be in a very similar situation, and we're going to start to get 26 to 30 minutes of the Baptist on most of these nights. The fouls are a problem. It's not quite Marquise Chris levels of stupidity, but he does foul at an extraordinary rate. He just racks up the other stats at an equally extraordinary rate as well. So I'm really excited to see what the Baptist can bring. Now, I reckon if we go back at the end of the season and look at the April numbers or the March numbers, he's going to be a top 50 guy in that time. I reckon there's a massive, massive chance of that as this team really winds it down and he's getting 32 a night and he's going out there and averaging 17 and 12 with two blocks on 60% shooting. I reckon that's a distinct possibility. So he's only owned in 51% of leagues, I think. It's maybe I'm a little bit off on that, but it's let's have a look. We can do that while we're recording. He is owned in 51% of leagues, wouldn't you know it? So yeah, he's around in leagues. Go and get him. I really do like what he can. His fantasy upside is beautiful. Now, what I do before each NBA draft is go through all the players and look at their fantasy production or fantasy potential on a team non-specific basis. And he came out, I think, as the second highest guy. Maybe the other guy that was up there was Zach Collins. But he was number one or number two in terms of the most productive rookie on a per-minute basis, and he's definitely showing us that at the moment with the high field goal percentage, good free throws, decent blocks, high rebound rate, and really decent or really, really good scoring as well. So the Baptist, you've heard me talk about him a bit, definitely had my worries about how Budenholz was going to use him, not my worries about how he would produce, but now this is definitely a positive sign, but be prepared for a 24-minuter. From the Baptist in the next game as Budenholzer decides to reverse course. That is a possibility, of course. The dud of the night, lots of questions coming in about Malcolm Brogdon. Brogdon was not ideal. 0 points, 0 threes, 1 rebound, 2 assists, 0 steals, 0 blocks, and missed all 4 of his field goals. And I could go on a very, very long rant about Jason Kidd in this game, but Kidd wasn't actually coaching. So unless he was sending secret texts to the coach whose name is completely slipping my mind, Joe something, completely slipping my mind, who was the coach for the Bucks today. Unless Kidd was slipping him text saying, you got to make sure you play 15 minutes of the mitten Gary Payton the second, and we cannot possibly go without having 20 minutes of DeAndre Liggins. Can't survive without 20 minutes of Liggins when our rookie of the year needs 17. Like, that sort of dipshit's thinking is what's really going to kill Brogdon's value. But before we overreact, before we jump down Kidd's throat, who wasn't coaching, or the Bucks organization, Brogdon played 32 minutes the game before. So I can't sit here and go, this is shithouse. It was shithouse, but it's not an ongoing shithouse thing. Now, if we look over the games that he's played since Bledsoe arrived, 34 minutes in the first one, really good. 33 in the next one, really good. 20 minutes in the next one, in which he accumulated 3 fouls in his first 9 minutes, which limited him. Fine. 26, where he had 12, 6, and 3. Yeah. 32. All right. And then today's 18 minutes. So while his numbers have not been good, he's ranked 245th over the last week. That's not good in the slightest. But he is shooting 27% and 25% from 3 for a true shooting of 35%, when last year he was super efficient, going 46, 87, and 41. So those numbers will come back up. When the shots fall, then I imagine he'll play, instead of 19 minutes, he'll play 30 minutes. Because there is no earthly reason that you would go, I need Gary Payton in there. I absolutely have to have Gary Payton in there. And the thing is that they got smashed today as well. They got smashed in the last game against the Mavericks. So Brogdon needs to be worked back in into that 27, 30 minute role. The negative side of that, the flip side is that Matty Dellavedova wasn't even playing. So if Kidd's going to come and dick around and put Dellavedova back in and just give Dellavedova Payton's minutes and run this still bullshit rotation of 20 minutes for Liggins and 15 minutes for Dally and 20 minutes for Brogo, then we're going to be in a bit of a problem. Now, in a 10-team league, I reckon you could... In an 8-team league, I think Brogdon can go. In a 10, I reckon you hold, but he's on the borderline. And in a 12, I would hold, again, it depends on who is around, on who is on your waiver wire. If Mario Chalmers is around, I wouldn't make that move because I think Chalmers' value is going to be limited short term. If Spencer Dinwiddie is there, if the Baptist is there, yeah, sure, I would consider making that move. And I probably would in those cases. It always comes down to that. So people will ask me questions a lot. You know, do I trade this guy? Do I drop this guy? There are just a million factors that go with it. What's your team like? Who else is on your team? Who's on the wire? Who are you looking to? And those questions, is it time to drop? Well, maybe. Maybe it's time to drop him because if you're dropping him so that you can pick up Tyler Kavanagh, probably not a good idea. If you're dropping him because for some weird reason Alfred Payton's on the waiver wire, then I'd say, yeah, sure. And there's always a lot of context. So you never, ever just drop a guy just to drop him. Oh, man, this guy sucks. I need to drop him. No, you need to add someone. Think positively. I'm adding this guy, so who's gonna suffer? Not, I need to drop him. Who can I possibly get to replace someone? Because I just can't stand having him on my team. Unless it's Punch Blob Shiploke, then you can just keep that guy on your team. So that's my little discussion. And that is why sometimes you're answering questions on Twitter when you do ask them, and I encourage you to ask the questions. It can be really tough because this is not it's not a simple game. There's so many factors that go into anything. That's why I couldn't recommend, obviously, being a member of Basketball Monster enough, because all the tools we've got there help you to analyze these things and work out how all these trades will go through and benefit you and benefit your team and adjust your standings and adjust your team analysis. Because it's not just best player wins. It's not just how it goes, especially in these one-for-one deals. There's a lot of different stuff that does go down when we're talking about trades in fantasy basketball. Well, we've got 11 games, a lot to talk about here. So we'll get stuck into all of that, lots of interesting performances as well on Monday. So let's get stuck into that right now. Bring that up on the screen for you guys. All right. The first game we're going to look at is the Utah Jazz and the Philadelphia 76ers. Ravishing Rick Rubio, still limited with that Achilles issue, played 22 minutes, but this game was a blowout, so he didn't need to extend himself a lot. There was only one player that went over 30 minutes, and that was Don Mitchell, who played 37, which is obviously quite a lot of minutes for Don. Everyone else limited, so I wouldn't be too concerned about Rubio's playing time there. He still had 12 points, he scored a bit early, 50% from the field, 2 triples, 2 assists, 3 steals and a block. Pretty good numbers from Ravishing. Tabo Sefolosha, we thought that he might be the starter when Gobert went down. He started that first game, put up good numbers against the Brooklyn Nets. But ever since he's gone back to the bench as Jonas Jerebko has started. Now, Jerebko played 20 minutes and had 3, 4, and 2. Nothing to see there outside of deeper leagues. But Tabo, under 20 minutes for the previous two games. He's dealing with some knee soreness himself. 7-3-1 with 3 steals. He's more of a steals streamer than a must-own guy. Rocket Rodney Hood is a must-own player. 13-4-3 with 3 steals in 32 minutes. While Don Mitchell had 17-4-5 and the triple one. And just forget your field goal percentage if you own Don. Now, him and Rocket are really going to kill it. Hood went 5 of 17. Mitchell went 6 of 19, which is clearly, some real issues in terms of your field goal percentage. Derek Favors, not so great here. Fouls limited him against Joel Embiid. 26 minutes, 9 and 7, but still someone that you do need to own. While Alec Burks was pretty poor. 1 of 10 from the field for Burksy. Onto the Sixers. Rashawn Holmes was dealing with some stomach issues. They said he was fine to play. Didn't play at all. Amir Johnson got all the backup center minutes. 8 and 13 with 4 blocks in 21 minutes for Amir. One of his best nights of the season. And I mention this strictly because, again, if you are still holding Rashawn Holmes, forget it. In a 10-team league, seriously forget it. 12-team league, just forget it. 14-team league, you probably want to forget it as well. So many people were adding him or holding on to him. He just needs 25 minutes a night and he's going to put up top 100 value. Did you see how good he was at the end of last season? And I love when I get those questions. Oh, did you see how good he was? Yes, I did. This is my job. I did see how good he was last year. So I'm aware of that. But where's he getting the 25 minutes from? Not only does he have Amir Johnson to battle for the backup center minutes, but he's got a guy in front of him by the name of Joel Embiid, who is now playing 30 plus minutes a night. So there just aren't those minutes available. So that's why it never made sense to me. And look, it could change. Embiid could go down. Of course, that's a possibility. He could beat Amir Johnson out completely and Amir just doesn't see the court again. I don't think that'll happen. But there's no reason to be holding on to Rashawn Holmes, in my opinion. Benny Simmons continues to be ridiculously good. 27 and 10, 2 assists and 4 steals for Simo. and he was 54% from the field. And the Sixers introducing some Aussie food into the stadium with 4 and 20 pies, an iconic brand of pies here in Australia. I think it's in Australia. It's definitely iconic here in Melbourne. I think it is across the country as well. I know it started in Melbourne, 4 and 20 meat pies. You can now buy them in the Sixers arena. And Darren Revell, mate, that is a horrendous attempt. If you go and check Darren Revell's timeline, he did tweet out an apology. But when you're going to eat a meat pie, and if any of you Americans are going to Wells Fargo Center to watch the Sixers and you're going to eat a meat pie, everything that Revell did, you don't do when you're eating a meat pie. Number one, you don't cut it in half. What are you doing? It comes in this nice, weird plastic with ventilation holes bag. It's clear and red. You keep it in the bag. You rip open one end. You just poke its head out just a little bit and you get the tomato sauce, which you guys call ketchup. Although tomato sauce is a little bit different than ketchup, you can't get tomato sauce over there. So you get your ketchup and you put it on top of the pie inside the bag. You hold it in two hands if you've got small hands. You hold it in one hand if you're a big, tough man like I am. And then you just eat the bastard. That's as simple as it is. No cutting it in half, no eating it with a knife and fork, no taking the lid off. Revell, you screwed it up. No idea. Rip open the bag, plonk some sauce on it. Straighten your gob, you're done. So if any of you guys are in Philly and you go watch a Sixers game and you have a meat pie and you want some advice on how to eat it, let me know. It is straightforward and let me know what you think of the meat pies. It's probably enough meat pie talk for now. Embiid played just 27 minutes. He was questionable coming into this game with some knee soreness, but 27 minutes, 15 and 11 with two blocks, really inefficient, but otherwise those numbers are okay. Jared Bayless did return. He only played 16 minutes. He's not going to really be, really too much of a threat or a fantasy useful player in 14 team leagues. His biggest impact is going to be limiting what Dario Šarić can do, which we saw in this game. Šarić didn't play the 30 minutes he'd been playing before, just 24 here, 5-7-2. Now, if you did add Šarić, based on what he'd done previously, you can hold on to him, but I think that with Bayless back, with Markel Fultz coming back in another 3 weeks or so, it's going to reduce Šarić's upside, and he probably won't be worth a long-term 12-team league roster spot. Bob Cove was good, 13-4-2, 4 steals and a block, fantastic stuff again from him, just continues to produce. Let's move ourselves onto the next game. It's the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Detroit Pistons. LeBron just went, nah, enough of this shit. I'm just going to go bananas. And he only played 27 minutes. That's probably the most important stat out of this whole game, that he played 27 minutes. 18-2-8, 3 triples, a steal and a block. Just couldn't miss in the first quarter. Even when he has a quiet game in terms of minutes, it's still a beastly line. Kevin Love, 19-11 in his 26. But the savior for the Cavs was Jose Calderon. Of course it was. 28 minutes, 14-4-2, 2 triples and a steal. Is he better than Derrick Rose? Yes. He should continue to start, even when Rose... I don't even know when Rose is coming back. I know he's out for a couple more weeks at least, but he's just shithouse. Calderon, could he actually be a better defender than Derrick Rose? What an indictment that is. Moves the ball around. Definitely not a 12-team guy or a 14-team league guy. More a 20-team league guy. And when Iman Shumpert comes back, he's going to lose some playing time. But it was a positive sign to see him out there doing some things. And it was Jay Crowder's best night as well. 18-5 with 2 triples in 26 minutes. The plumber, J.R. Smith... 3 points in 27 minutes, only a stream guy for 12-team leagues. Well, Dwayne Wade didn't need to see much of Wade in this one. Only 20 minutes, 8-4-5. He'll probably play more in the next game if it is a little bit closer. The tackle box, John Lua was out again with his ankle problem. Going to have an MRI. I think we're going to see a few more games missed from him. So deep leagues, you will want to pay some attention to Eric Morland. 21 minutes for Morland here, 6-7 with 2 blocks. He won't get that much playing time each night, more in the 13 to 15 minute range backing up Drummond, but that can be useful, and he's a pretty strong rebounder. Honestly, looking at this Pistons box score, it's pretty embarrassing, it's pretty disgusting. Only 3 players got into double digits, and the highest scorer was Toby Harris with 11. Reggie Jackson had 10, and Stan Johnson had 10. There's not a huge amount to take away from this game. It's just one that Pistons fans will likely want to forget, and honestly, there's just not much you can do from it from a fantasy point of view in trying to work out if there's any value there or not, because it was a smashing from the very beginning. Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers against the Orlando Magic. Is this a revenge game? But I admit multiple people tweet at me. Now, how long do revenge games last? He's been on another team in the interim. He has played against this team multiple times already last season. He played against them twice. But this is a big line. I think more than a revenge game, he just played well. Simple as that. 29, 9 and 5 with 7 steals and 2 blocks. He's just unfortunate that Kyrie had 47 points on about 130% shooting. Otherwise, he would have clearly been the monstrous line of the night. That is a real big one from Oladipo. He has been a monster this season. And the other guy who's been quietly a monster is Bojan Bogdanović. 35 minutes for Bogdanović, 26 and 7 with 5 triples and 2 steals. Now, in true Bogdanović style, there were no assists and there were no blocks, but the 7 rebounds and the 2 steals are definitely a positive. But once again, his big numbers and his big lines come when he's shooting at a crazy rate. 71% on threes in this one, 60% from the field. He continues to shoot at a really unsustainable rate, and when those things come down, his value will tumble. I think we spoke about this yesterday, about his numbers. He's the 25th ranked player over the last week, shooting 60% from the field and 62% from three, averaging 21 points with 4.5 triples. Now, there's no way that any of that continues. The assists at 1.5, the steals at 0.8, like, they're numbers that are more likely to persist, and the scoring comes down to 13 points, and his value does dissipate. But for now, he's on a hot streak. Ride it. Because it is going to die. It is not going to last. I can 100% assure you of that. The Deuce Young had a good game. 17 and 5 with 3 steals. Continues to be strong. While Miles Turner wasn't his best night. Now, he did say that he tweaked his ankle. 8 and 5 in 34 minutes with a couple of blocks. It's coming off a really strong game the other day, so I'm not totally bothered by it. But if you want to go back on those buy lows, go for it. Now, if you have been holding Domantas Sabonis, this should worry you. Just 20 minutes here for Sabonis. The numbers are okay, 10 and 4. But the fact that his minutes, they're not mid-20s. He's not playing alongside Miles Turner very much at all. It's like 4 or 5 minutes a game. It's not enough at 20 minutes to sustain him with any long-term value. So if there's someone out there that you do want to go and add, if for some stupid reason Taurean Prince is available, like, you make that switch immediately. If Boyan's around, I would make that switch for Sabonis. These minutes, I don't think it's sustainable for him to put up these numbers. Lance Stephenson had a interesting line, 23 minutes with 3 points, but 10 boards and 6 assists. Well, Daz Collison had 6, 6, and 8 with 3 steals. On to the Magic, Nick Vucevic, 25 and 13, 3 triples, a steal, and a block. A very, very good fantasy game. Or As Gordon had 13 and 12 with a steal and a block, but it wasn't great for the Magic. They are absolutely stinking at the moment. They are falling off a cliff, which was always going to happen. Their 3-point shooting and their 3-point defense was never going to sustain at those rates, and both those things are coming back to earth, and they are struggling. Fournier still hit his 4 triples at 50%, 16, 3, and 4, so the individual numbers are okay. Lord Alfred Payton, I did reference him earlier. He'll be dropped in some leagues, and I would grab him. This was not a good game from him, 3, 1, and 7, but the 7 assists, the 3 steals, keeps his value afloat, and I would be pouncing on him if he was around. John Simmons had 10, 3, and 2, and another guy in a similar vein to Bogdanović says that when the high percentage scoring drops, he's not doing enough to augment it in other areas for him to retain his value, and we're starting to see that happen with him right at the moment. They do, as weird as it is to say for a rookie, they need John Isaac back because he is one of their best defenders, and I can't speak highly enough of John Isaac as what I've seen from him as a rookie. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Charlotte Hornets.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Teague, 35 minutes, 18 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, and 3 blocks. Really filled up the box score. Horrendous in terms of shooting. And again, this team, and I don't want to feel like that I'm, you know, constantly just bagging the Timberwolves or bagging Tom Thibodeau, but this is a coaching problem. When Jeff Teague takes 18 shots, when Jamal Crawford takes 12, when Andrew Wiggins takes 14, and Karl Anthony Towns is sitting at 10 as the 5th highest shot attempt guy on the team, and yeah, equal usage to Wiggins, to Shabazz Muhammad, to Jim Butler, to, and then less than Crawford, Teague, and Aaron Brooks, who won't count because he only played a minute. But that's a problem. You need to get Towns the ball more. He needs to shoot it more often. Now, he got to the line 9 times, so some of those will be shot attempts there as well. But he needs more of the ball. Still, you know, nice numbers, 18 and 12 with a block. But this is trending this way. And I have said this, I said it yesterday as well, and we saw it, you know, repeat itself. The playoff schedule in a lot of leagues will be shit for the Timberwolves. So if you can get another first-round guy back for him, Davis, Cousins, Jokic, LeBron, you might get a better first-round output out of the first-round playoff output than what Towns can give you. Jim Butler, yeah, not great, 14 and 7. Well, Wigo, he is just infuriating from a real-life perspective and a fantasy perspective. He had, like, that massive defensive night in the last game and then drops an 11-1-2 turd burger. Like, that's just horrendous. And that this sort of inconsistency and bullshit disappearance in the other categories is what's going to keep him from ever being a top 40 or top 30 fantasy guy. I'm not ever sure that he gets there, unfortunately. The Charlotte Hornets. Now, I don't like calling people out by name, so I don't do it. But I do like to reference things. Then I don't make up scenarios. And if I do make up a scenario, I tell you that it's made up. But everything that I tell you about people that ask me questions about trades or drops or ads or draft picks is real, because it gives you an idea to see some of the thinking for me to correct some of the stuff. Well, not correct it because it makes me sound like I know everything, which I don't. No, of course I don't. But someone yesterday was like, oh, I need to drop Dwight Howard. Who should I add? I go, what are you dropping Dwight Howard for? Oh, I can't stand his free throws. Why'd you draft him? Oh, he's killing me in free throws. Killing me in turnovers. So? Who cares? Dwight just went and had 25 and 20 with 4 blocks on 8 of 10 shooting. And you know what? The free throws were shithouse. 9 of 14. But if you don't know that Dwight Howard is going to single-handedly lose you free throws every week, you either won't listen to this podcast for any episode over the past 1,025 episodes, or you just ignored it. So these weird things happen. And if you're in a situation where Dwight Howard gets dropped to your waiver wire because someone can't handle his free throw percentage, and you are positioned with the third worst free throw percentage, or the fourth worst, or your middle of the pack, you know what you do? You say, screw this shit. I'm getting Dwight. I'm losing free throws, but I am winning field goals. I am winning rebounds. I am winning blocks. Because he can, even if you have to change your course mid-season because you aren't, look, if you're the best free throw team or a top three or top four free throw team, I probably wouldn't do it. Or I might do it, keep him on my bench and trade him to someone and go, hey, mate, look, you're bad in free throws. Do you want Dwight? And get something back. But if you're middle of the pack or down the bottom, you just add him and you go, we're done. Free throws are done. Forget about it. And let's just feast on this Brins. He killed Karl Anthony Towns in this one. He killed him. Frank the Tank had a big game. 24 points in 22 minutes. 4 triples with 3 rebounds and 3 assists. I would not count on that happening too often. Nick Batum had 17, 4 and 2. While Jez Lamb played through the hamstring problem, which looks fine. 21 minutes, 16, 5 and 3. Much like Domantas Sabonis, those numbers are really good. 16, 5 and 3 is really good. It's the 21 minutes of the problem, because putting up 16, 5, and 3 in 21 minutes is good, but it's a one-off because he shot 6 of 9 from the field, which is unrealistic to expect all the time. When he goes 3 of 9, then we're talking about 10, 5, and 3. Now, he is a very good rebounder for what he does, but in a 20-minute role, there are very few players who can maintain top 100 value in a 21 or 22-minute role, and John the Baptist Collins is one of those. I don't think Jez Lamb is one, but I'm still holding him because in the 3 games since Batum or 4 games since Batum has been back, he's been fine. But at some point, the shooting, the high usage isn't going to stick. So be aware of that. Kemba had 14, 4, and 3 with a steal and a block. Not his best game, but still contributing. While Malik Monk out of the rotation, once again, he's not sniffing 12. He's not sniffing 12-team league value. He's only owned in 11% of leagues and that sort of dynasty stuff. If he can develop his point guard skills, he's going to have some long-term value. But he was a guy that, when I referenced, you know, John Collins earlier on about having, he looked great coming out as a rookie in my rookie initial projections. Monk was not one of those guys. He was very, very, very far down because he projected as a guy who would get threes and shoot a shit percentage as a rookie and score some points, but not enough. He's got to be able to add those assists. He has to be able to add those steals, and he has to have a level of efficiency, which we haven't seen yet. So he is an interesting guy to watch as we move forward. The LA Clippers and the New York Knicks, just a horrendous, horrendous showing from the Clippers. Pat Bev was back. He only played 22 minutes because this game was over. The Knicks absolutely stomped them. 9-6 with 3 triples, 2 assists, and a block. It goes back to, you know, I think I referenced this on the podcast yesterday, but someone said to me, oh man, who do I drop so I can get Pat Bev out of my IR spot? Maybe I didn't reference it. I think I tweeted it. And the answer to that question almost invariably is nobody. You absolutely never activate someone out of your IR until they actually play. Unless their name is LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Russ Westbrook, Jim Harden, unless they're a top 20 guy, maybe a top 30 guy, you don't activate them after the first game. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, they can be rusty with their skills. Two, they can be on a minutes restriction, like Rondo we've seen, like Beverly playing 22 minutes here. Three, the more days that you wait to take them out of your IR spot, the chances of someone else on your team getting injured increases, and then you can do a direct swap and you don't lose a player. You don't lose a player who you would have wanted to keep. So with a guy like Beverly, who's a top 100 guy, but he's like a 75 to 100 sort of a range player, you just keep him on your IR spot. Especially on an 11-game Monday or a 14-game Wednesday, you don't need him. use one of your other guys and then see what happens. And then see if any news develops on Tuesday, on Wednesday or Thursday over Thanksgiving. If anyone's out, they get the IR tag and you make the direct switch that way. There are people who are asked, and even with Chris Paul, I wouldn't have done this, who like a week before he comes back, or Chris Paul's coming back on Thursday, who do I drop? Well, just wait. How about you wait till he comes back, wait till he plays his 20-minute a game for the first couple of games, and then look to activate him in 10 days' time. That is how I always approach this. There is almost no situation where I am preemptively activating someone off IR. It just doesn't occur to me to do that. Well, not doesn't occur, I actively don't do it. Blake Griffin's percentages are taking a real hit with the Rooster out. 21-4-5 with 2 threes and 2. Still accumulating numbers, but his field goal percentage is poor. Well, where's Johnson? How's the resurrection on this guy? The fact that Doc Rivers would not play this bloke at all last season when Paul Pierce and Allen Anderson were getting minutes at the small forward is an atrocity, and he would have helped the Clippers, no doubt. He is a guy who can accumulate numbers. He can be a defensive presence, and we're seeing that here. 13-4-2, 3 triples, 2 steals, and a block. He is one of the more low-key triple one players. And the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, is out for the next 7 to 10 days. So if you need triple one action, if you need some steals and blocks in a 14-team league, yeah, go and grab Wes. He's going to give you a week's worth of action. If you need some value in a 12-team league, like streaming Wes in won't be a bad situation. Lou Williams, with Pat Bev back, only 26 minutes, 8-2-2 with 2 triples, while Sendarius Thornwell moved to the bench and played 16 minutes. And Austin Rivers was atrocious, 1 of 9 for 2 points in 32 minutes. On to the Knicks.
Percentages.
Yeah, Kristaps had 25-7, and he also had the Richie Beno, the rare double drop.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Yes, Rich. The Ashes test starts tomorrow. The Australian selection team, again, the chairman of selectors for Australian Cricket Board, Garth Forman and John Paxson. Really, really amazing they're able to effectively screw up 2 jobs at the same time, but this is Garth Pax we're talking about. Enes Kanter, 12-16, 2 steals and a block. This guy is good. I don't give a shit what anyone says. He is good. He is a bad defender, but he is a good player. And he is significantly better than the Cock Monster, Joakim Noah, and Bill Hernan Gomez. And this is why I was pretty interested in him. Now, I didn't know how Hornacek was going to handle the rotations, and that gave me pause. But it's clear that he is just going to start every game, that he is healthy. He is going to play between 25 and 33 minutes, depending on the situation. And he's going to rack up numbers. And this is as good an Enes Kanter line as you could possibly get. Courtney Lee is solid as well, 27 minutes for Lee, 10-5-3 with 2 steals and a block. Now, if you were in fantasy playoff time, I'd say he's an absolute must-own 12-team league guy because I'm going to get consistent production at a 12-team level. But when we're 5 weeks into the season, when there's zero upside for Courtney Lee, I'd rather take a flyer on the Baptist. I'd rather grab a guy like Don Mitchell a couple of weeks ago just to see where it goes. And then Lee's going to be around your waiver wire. He's going to provide okay value, but let's try and get the top 50 guy and see how that goes. And then if Lee's around at Christmas time, you add him and you just run through with the top 120 type numbers. Timmy Hardaway played through his sore foot. And this is why, you know, I was pretty big on him heading into the season. He's got some ability to put up some other numbers. 13-5-5, 2 steals and a block. Now, he only took 13 shots, only played 26 minutes, but that's a very, very good line. Doug McDirt, 16-5 with 5 triples. Hit his threes, but in true Bojan Bogdanovic style, gives you sweet FA in other categories, a long way away from being a 12-team must-own. While Frankie Ntilikina's minutes have been limited lately, Hornacek said he's been a little bit unwell, so that's limiting his playing time. Still, when we get to December, I do think at some point in December he will be starting, but you know, you're only going to be owning him as an assist and steals specialist, it appears, at this time. The Washington... I didn't put that box score up for you guys in the video. Washington Wizards and the Milwaukee Bucks. John Wall was playing 31 minutes, 15-1-6. Wasn't the greatest Johnny Wall night, but still got the job done. Well, Otto Porter just gets it done. Again, limited usage, under 20, 12-11-4, 3 steals and 2 triples, just puts up numbers and generally does it efficiently, although wasn't efficient in this one. Bradles Beal has been fantastic. I think he should be an all-star this year. Quick spoiler alert, we are going to be having a very early all-star article on Basketball Monster coming out soon. Myself, Greg Ehrenberg, Matt Smith, and Kyle McEwen. We've picked our starters, we've picked our reserves, and at the moment we're in the middle of the captain's select draft, me and Greg on one team, and then there's Team Kyle and Matt as well. So you'll see that article come out soon as we go through and select our players for our early All-Star game. Markieff Morris, 11-7, ho-hum, it's fine. He's getting his minutes back. He's very Courtney Lee-ish, where he's going to have this solid-ish type numbers, but there's just zero upside there, but he should be owned over Lee anyway. While Marcin Gortat had 10 and 15 on some pretty poor shooting, but 10 and 15 is nice. 35 minutes is nice. It is also extremely unsustainable. Kelly Oubre, speaking of unsustainable, shot 75% for 18 and 4 in 23 minutes, and he is just a 12-team streamer. On to the Milwaukee Bucks. We talked about the Brogdon issue. We had the Mitten Gary Payton play 15 minutes for God knows what reason, and DeAndre Liggins gets his 17 because that has to happen. Eric Bledsoe, he clearly his best game for the Bucks, 14-3-2 with 6 juicy steals, 2 big blocks, a massive night from Bledsoe, and 35 minutes is super. John Henson, the Muppet, owned in 38% of leagues. The other 62% of you, just wake up. He needs to be owned. 10-10, 2 assists and 2 blocks for the Muppet, while Yanni had 23-8-4 with 3 blocks. Middleton's been okay since Bledsoe arrived, while Tone Snell had 10-3, and Tone is not a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. The Portland Trailblazers, the Memphis Grizzlies. How's the Noah Vonleh form here? 31 minutes for Vonleh, 11 and 18 with 3 blocks. Tons of questions rolling in about Vonleh. A lot of them phrased in the variety that just does my head in for whatever reason. Anything to see here? I'm not sure. You tell me. But in terms of you want to look at his fantasy value, he's been an elite rebound streamer for quite a while. Since he entered the starting lineup last season, he was getting rebounds at a high rate. Now, this is the first time we've really seen him play big minutes. Add those blocks. He can hit some threes, but it was encouraging. The problem I have here is that Al-Farouq Aminu will be back in a week or so, and that's going to impact what Vonleh can do. Now, Caleb Swanigan's not in the rotation at the moment, nor is Zach Collins, and I don't think Vonleh is going to get 31 minutes every night. But he is a name to watch for your deeper leagues, definitely, just to see, you know, what he's doing. Because he was shit-outs for his first 2 seasons in the league, 2.5 seasons, but he has definitely picked it up quite a bit with what he's been able to do. Yusuf Nurkic, 10-7 with a block, really struggling with his shooting, especially 23% from the field. That's absolutely horrendous from Yusuf Nurkic, and that is what's really bringing his numbers down. He's at 44% from the field this season. We know how strongly he finished last year. He is now the 130th ranked player because that field goal percentage is so low, because his minutes aren't that high either, 28 minutes per game. He's still averaging 14-7 with a block, but he has got massive scope to improve, and I think he's a significant buy low guy, because once that field goal percentage ticks up 4 or 5 extra percent, you're talking about him going to be a 16-17-7 guy. The more shots he gets, the more confidence he gets, the better he plays on defense, the more minutes he plays. An extra 3-4 minutes can come, and we're talking about a guy that should be able to be a top 70 guy from here on out. So I think you can get him at a significant discount. But when we talked about him in draft season, we talked about the risk of drafting Yusuf Nurkic. There was the mental stability side of things. The how is this guy going to cope with, you know, playing consistently? There's the injury side of things. And we're seeing that now. We've seen this happen with Nurkic. But I do believe in him as a bounce back guy and as a buy low candidate. CJ McCollum had 24-8. Not much else there. In fact, nothing else but a good line there. Well, Dame Lillard suffered an ankle sprain, came back in. He says he's going to be right to play for the Blazers next game. Just want to check how that ankle swells up, though. 21-3-4. Shabazz Napier, really a lot of minutes coming for Shabazz, because Mo Harkless, shithouse. Evan Turner, even more shithouse. So Napier is getting a lot of these minutes. 27 minutes here, 16-4-3 with a 1-1. If Lillard misses time, Napier is an absolute automatic must-grab player. For now, he's putting up numbers which are valuable in 12-team leagues because they're running with a McCollum, Lillard, Napier backcourt a lot of the time, getting rid of this Harkless Turner bullshit, which has been completely unsuccessful. You're not adding Napier in 12s, but you are in 16-team leagues, and you probably are in 14-team leagues with the way that he is playing. Myers Leonard, also you need to have a look in 20-team. It's 17 minutes here for Myers, played in the first quarter, 8-4. It's not a spectacular line, but he's getting consistent minutes, and that is important. As for Mo Harkless, surely no one still owns him in 12-10 leagues. Surely not. The Memphis Grizzlies. Mario Chalmers, must-own guy, 21-6-6. Big night there, while Marc Gasol was brilliant as well. 19-12-7, a steal, 2 blocks, and 3 triples. Probably Jermichael Green's best game since he returned, 11-5 with 2 steals in 34 minutes. I think Green should be owned, but he is a low upside guy. I consider him along with a Markieff Morris sort of a player. He can get minutes, and have a look what he did last year. He got the minutes. He just doesn't do anything. He doesn't provide much defensively. He's not an overly strong rebounder. He's not going to score. He's not going to have elite percentages on huge volume or anything like that. He's just a fine, plodding sort of a player who provides okay numbers without anything spectacular. So he's fine to own, but the excitement level's not high. Tyreek's pretty exciting. 20 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. Played through a sore shoulder. He was good, while Dylan Brooks had 4, 2, and 2. Jim Ennis, horrendous 8 minutes for Jim. Chandler Parsons has clearly taken that job back. And again, I have said that Parsons is going to be a factor in fantasy championships and playoffs. Not saying he's a must-own guy or a guy to grab in 12s. In a 14-team league, I would absolutely be looking at Chandler. And in 12s, grabbing him at the right time is going to be key. He's at 6-2 and 3 here in 24 minutes. Deontay Davis played instead of Brandon Wright. And as I said, if you need blocks, Davis can do it. 13 minutes, 2 blocks. This is what he does. He blocks shots at a high rate, and that can really help his fantasy value. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans is the next game. Paulie George, another big one. 26, 5, and 4, 5 steals and 6 triples. While Russ Westbrook, this is the Russell Westbrook that we saw last year. 22, 16, 12, 2 triples, 3 steals. Now, I understand he's been a real disappointment if you picked him in the top 5 this year. He's ranked, I think, 35th or something this season. If you punt free throws, which are at a high volume and at a low percentage, he comes in at the 15th best player. Now, if you drafted Westbrook, you're obviously not punting free throws. So that's not my intention of talking about that ranking in that way. But what it should give you an indication of is if when his free throws come back to the normal level, with his current production, that's where he'll sit. But you also have to then factor on 2 or 3 more points from the made free throws, and he probably then becomes back to being a top 10 player, even with his current level of production in the other categories. So it's not as doom and gloomish as you might expect. And the people go, oh man, he's killing me in turnovers. Like, what did you expect? The dude averaged like 5.5 per game last year. He was always going to kill your turnovers. It was never going to be a question there. He was always going to kill your field goal percentage. The free throws, no one could have predicted that, but that will right itself. So there is still some buy low opportunity for Westbrook. Some of his owners are still pissed because people really adhere to the ranks. Oh man, he's the eighth round ranked value. And that's bullshit. It's not how you should be valuing these guys. And you know, I can't stress enough. Now, I use the ranks as just a general overall guide on things, but it's not the way that you should be looking at all of this stuff, I don't believe anyway. So Westbrook is coming back. He got to the line 10 times here. He hit 8 of them. The free throws are coming back, and he's going to be a top 10 guy this year. I feel pretty confident about saying that. Melo had 19, 9, and 2 with 4 steals, a strong night from him, while Steve Adams had 15 and 3, and as per usual, just very, very little happening with the other players on the Thunder. For the New Orleans Pelicans, Boogie, I reckon we might be getting a suspension there for Book. A big elbow to Russ's head. 26 minutes, 18, 9, and 4. 3 steals and a block, so prepare yourself for that. Now, with Dante Cunningham moving to the bench, he could move in and start at power forward. He is terrible, so I'm not sure why they would do that, but they probably will. The guy to watch out for is going to be Sheck Diallo. Now, he didn't actually get into the game in this one, but they could be in a situation where they will have to start him or play him 20 minutes a game if Boogie's out, and that's going to have some 16-team league value for Diallo, just as a one-game thing. Tone Davis played 45 minutes, 36 and 15 with 2 blocks, a nice night there. And the guy that you want to look as who's moving into the Duke Ellington 3-point category streamer, Uncle P, is Darius Miller, who hit another 3 triples, 11 points in 22 minutes, even with Tone Allen back. Ian Clark is out of the rotation, and Miller is providing value and played more than Dante Cunningham, as he should. They did change that starting lineup, putting Cunningham to the bench. Etwan Moore started and had 12 and 1 with 2 steals, but he is a 14 to 16 team league guy. Rajon Rondo had 8 points. He played, had 8 assists. He had 31 minutes. They're all good. He is just a horrendous, horrendous on-court player. He's a massive negative everywhere he goes. He hasn't been good for 9 years, I reckon. 8 years, maybe. He's just a poor on-court player. I think that they were like a minus 24 or something with him on the court in this game and still somehow managed to win because Jameer Nelson was like a plus 27. He is a horrendous fit with anybody. And again, maybe I do it on purpose. I think I do it on purpose because it was a stat about how shit he was, and I quote tweeted and said, "Oh, but the Bulls definitely would have swept the Celtics if he didn't get hurt last year." And many people said, "Oh, they would have," because he played well in 2 games, and I absolutely don't deny that he did play well in 2 games. He just played shit in the previous 500 games. I'll take the 500 game sample versus the 2 game sample against the Celtics when they would have got it figured out, and I don't think they would have let Rondo sweep him out of the playoffs at a 4-0, acting like he was prime LeBron James here, taking him out of the playoffs. But I digress. He's shit. You still want to add him for fantasy, though, because the minutes are going to be there. Elvin Gentry doesn't know a good point guard when it slaps him on the ass. So I'm not sure we're going to see any demotion there, but those assists can be pretty tasty. It's just watching him that's extraordinarily painful. And again, much like Derrick Rose, he used to be one of my favorite players, but I can recognize when they turn shit and they can't recognize the changing game, and Rondo is definitely one of those guys. The Atlanta Hawks and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs get the victory. The Baptist was great. The Undertaker was strong as well. 11 and 9 for Dwayne Dedmon, a steal and 2 blocks. Exactly what you would have hoped for if you had have drafted him. Just really living up to expectations after a little bit of a rocky start. Dennis Schroeder hurt himself but came back in and he was fine. 15, 3, and 9. While Taurean Prince I had a lot of people, you know, throwing out nicknames for Prince. He does feel like he needs a nickname. I'm not quite there with it yet. I'm not really sure where we need to go with this nickname, but he does need a nickname. But I'm going to work on it. Submit your submissions. I'm not quite there with it yet. 18-8, a steal and a block, two triples. Again, people are saying, oh, yeah, do you think he's going to pick it up later in the season? He's killing it. He's putting up good numbers. He's good. Kent Bazemore's not. He was 2 of 13 for 5-5 with a steal and two blocks, but I would still own him in 12-team leagues. While Malcolm Delaney played an astonishing 30 minutes. Had 5 assists and 0 points, but 30 minutes for Delaney is just too much, especially when DeAndre Bembry's playing 4 minutes. Surely we can siphon 20 of those minutes onto Bembry's playing time. He's a bit of a way away, Bembry, but I really, really like his skill set. Assists, steals, good rebounding, decent scorer with a high field goal percentage without being a good shooter, because he's an insane finisher at the rim, but he's just working his way back. Marco Bellinelli had 11-2-2 with two steals. He's flirting with 12-team value, but I don't think it's going to stick. For the Spurs, Pat Mills, 8-8-7 with a Richie Beno as well.
2 for 2-2-2.
Paddy probably did it on purpose, knowing the Ashes are starting tomorrow. Kyle Anderson was great as well. These are the numbers that when Kyle Anderson was drafted, where I looked at him and went, you know what? Shit, this guy's got some fantasy upside. Then he went to the worst team possible in terms of being able to find those minutes. But 13-6-10, assists out of a power forward, small forward position can be really valuable, and he can do that. He has provided solid enough value in 14-16 team leagues while Kawhi has been out. Unfortunately, that is going to disappear. Speaking of disappearing, Rudy Gay can get his ass completely off your 12-team leagues. There's no reason to be owning Gay in any of those leagues. He played 13 minutes for 4 points. Dan Green had 14-8, and Aldridge had another 22-11. Your sell high window is still open for LaMarcus. Go for Blake Griffin. Go for Miles Turner. Your sell high window is very, very open. The Boston Celtics came from behind to extend their winning streak, beating the Dallas Mavericks in overtime. Al Horford, only 3 points for Al, but just, these are when you get elite players, when they can provide when their shot doesn't go in. 8 boards, 7 assists, including a really key late rebound. 1 steal, 2 blocks. Great stuff. Jason Tatum is so graceful. I love watching him play. 15-9 with a steal and a block. Some of his finishing is really, really impressive for a rookie. Well, Jaylen Brown, the box scores for him always start off looking good. 22 points, man, that's fast. Awesome, yes, go Jaylen. 3 triples, yeah. 9 rebounds, yeah. 0 assists, what the fuck? What's going on? 1 steal, 0 blocks, 3 of 6 from the line. What are you doing? What are you doing? And he's very much got a look sexy and then falls off type box score. And that's always going to keep him down in the rankings. Now, he absolutely is a must-own guy and he does have value, but the free throws, the lack of assists, the defensive stat reduction a lot of the time does really limit his overall value. But when you're talking about your ranks, oh, yeah, he's 13th round value. It's not as simple as that, because those points are really, really hard to find, especially when he's hitting at 62% like he did here. Marcus Morris, 8-9, 26 minutes. Apparently he's on a minutes restriction. I'd say he's more on a talent restriction than anything else, but Brad Stevens said it's a minutes restriction. Where's he getting these extra 5 minutes per game from? Where are they coming from? Semi Ojeleye? Maybe. They're not coming from Jason Tatum, I can assure you of that. And Morris is not a 12-team league guy to me, nor is Terry Rozier if he is owned still. Marcus Smart, horrendous. Just horrendous. 3 of 15, yet still a really bloody good player. Fantastic plays late in the game and a good fantasy line. 12-3-8, 2 threes and 2 steals. And much like Dwight Howard, if you drafted Marcus Smart expecting good field goal percentage, then I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I thought he could be better than this, and I think he will be better than this, but what more can I tell you? Sorry. For the Mavericks, the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 31-6. With a block, a nice, strong game from the pencil. Well, Wes Matthews with his second big performance in a row, 18-6-3, 4 steals and 4 triples. Now, Wes won't be consistent, and he will lose some touches and playing time when Seth Curry eventually returns, which is looking like it's at least a week away. But Matthews should be owned in 12s. Dirk played 32 minutes, don't expect that to happen all that often. 14-12 for him, while JJ Barea had 16-3-4. Was not a good Dennis Smith night, 8-5-4, and Yogi Ferrell, in 37 minutes, only managed 6-2-2. Yogi is not a 12-team league guy, but Dennis Smith 100% absolutely is. Maxi Kleber started, had 4 boards, 20-30 team leagues maybe, while Nerlens Noel not in the rotation. The last game of the night, the Denver Nuggets, they pounded the Sacramento Kings. There was no Paul Millsap, there was no baby neck Wilson Chandler, and there was no Michael Malone, who was suspended for this game. Nikola Jokic was back though, 16-14 with a steal and a block. Big numbers there. While Farton Will Barton, man, whenever he gets the opportunity, I have not thought that Barton is a good player. I still don't think he's a great player, but he has proved me wrong. He is definitely more effective than what I thought he was a couple of years ago. So I happily admit when I'm wrong on a guy. And while I am wrong on what he does, I still have, when everyone's healthy, He's not playing 37 minutes a night. He's playing 27, and that does limit his upside, but clearly he should be owned. 25, 6, and 5, while Gaz Harris.
Nice Gary!
Just as well, the Nice Gary is going... A lot of cricket references in today's show. Nice Gary is going to be retired from the Australian cricket team. Matthew Wade, who was the guy that would say that, he is no longer our wicketkeeper. The new replacement wicketkeeper, Tim Payne, will not be saying Nice Gary. The crowd will definitely still say it, but the Nice Gary from the stump cam mic is dead and buried. But long live Nice Gary.
Nice, Gary!
He had 20 points with 3 threes and 3 steals. The Blue Arrow only played 24 minutes but had 18, 2 and 1, so I'm pretty happy with that. While Ken Faried started and was outplayed by both Trey Lyles and Wancho. Wancho played 23 minutes and Lyles played 19. If Baby Neck and Paul Millsap remain out again, it doesn't appear that Wilson Chandler will, then you might be able to look at Wancho as a backup 3 and 4, but we're not talking about 12-team value for either of these guys. For the Sacramento Kings, George Hill, is he back? Yeah, I'd add him. 33 minutes, 16, 3 and 2, 4 steals and a block with 3 threes for Georgie. The minutes are back. He looked disinterested. He wasn't playing enough, but pairing him with De'Aaron Fox is really working, and Fox had 32 minutes, 12, 3 and 5, and he should be owned also in 12-team leagues. Will Cauley-Stein, 30 minutes plus in 2 consecutive games. He played 23 minutes for 2 and 5. This is the problem with him and with the coaching. Inconsistency in play, inconsistency in playing time, which does make him a hard guy to rely upon, but you should own him. Scalabissier started, played 13 minutes. What's the point? What's the point of this bullshit? No Vince Carter, no Budrick Heald. So Frank Mason played 21 minutes and had 11, 3 and 6. He's been very, very good. Can he remain in the rotation ahead of Vince? Maybe. Ahead of Budrick? No. But 20-team leagues, you might want to have a look at Frankie Mason there. We talked about Costa already, and Zeebo had 12 and 6 with 3 steals. Cherish those 3 steals, because that's not something that you get all that often from Big Zeebo. Not a great night from Bogdan Bogdanovic, who had 10 and 3, and he's not a 12-team league guy, because the minutes just aren't there, and his production's waned quite a bit. And that, my friends, does it for all of the games from Monday. Not going to do a DFS preview of that one game. You can go check all that out on Basketball Monster. But what I will do before we wrap things up is have a look at the perfect DFS lineups from Monday. On FanDuel, Russ had 65.2, Kyrie 59.6, Oladipo 73.3, Wes Matthews 39.7, Bojan Bogdanovic 39.4, Paulie George 51, Amir Johnson 36.1, Vonleh had 42.1 and Dwighty Howard 56 for a whopping total of 462.4. And as you can see, only $58,300 was spent on that. For DraftKings, Westbrook 70, Oladipo 65.75, Bogdanovic 40.75, that's Bojan, Vonleh 42, Nowitzki 35, Irving 62.75, Wes Matthews 39, and Dwighty Howard 57 for a total of 412.25. And that costs $49,900. Actually, one thing I will talk about for DFS tomorrow, Denzel the Hammer Valentine, I think he's really a lock at that sort of a price for the value he can put up. And I do really like Justin Holiday tomorrow as well. I think that the prices that both those guys are at, there is some value. The other guys who I would look at with a degree of confidence is Lauri Markkanen and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Probably the guys that I... Pope more for GPPs. But those Bulls guys, the Hammer, Holiday, and Markkanen are definitely some guys that you can pay attention to. Don't forget, check out our new sponsor for you guys who have got all this NBA knowledge and want to make some money outside of fantasy. Where you bet is more important than who you bet on. So go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code LockedOnNBA for a 100% deposit match bonus. So check those guys out. And of course, you can find this podcast wherever you find all podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, that's the best place for you to find this show. Go and leave a review. Don't go leave a review. Go and leave a 5-star review. Go and say this guy's got a sick beard. Whatever you want to say. Review whatever, but just 5 stars, Apple Podcasts. Great way to show your appreciation of the podcast. And go and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can check out our new Facebook page, which is Locked On NBA Net, I think it is. Just search up Locked On NBA Network on Facebook for the home of all of the NBA podcasts, and you can see what's going down right across the network. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Yusuf Nurkic.